I am so excited to be here with you this morning. And we are bound together, you and I, even though we don't know each other. We are Unitarian Universalists. One thing that means is that we have no creed. We have no statement of belief that you sign onto before you can join a Unitarian Universalist congregation. We are a covenantal religion. The word covenant comes from the word covenir, which means to travel together. We travel together in religious community. The Latin root of the word religion is religare, which means to bind together. So we are bound together in this faith. We are walking together in religious community in the spirit of love. Your covenant, you speak it together every Sunday. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant. To dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. So we live in these times, confusing and heartbreaking, exquisite, filled with love, filled with resistance, filled with family and community. What does it mean to dwell together in peace here at Foothills, to seek the truth in love and to help one another? Our covenant calls us to walk together in religious community, and that means showing up regularly, even when it gets difficult. Now, why would it be difficult? I don't know this congregation, but my experience of being in any group of people, once that initial falling in love has worn off a little bit, and the glow isn't shining quite so brightly, maybe some warts of some fellow congregants or staff are starting to show a little bit, you might find yourself disagreeing with some of the other members. So, has that ever happened here? Inevitably, we know we will find ourselves in conflict, or at least discomfort, right, with the messiness of human relationships between members. Sometimes we are betrayed. And so what do we do then? Our covenant, our faith, calls on us to keep showing up. I believe it is the primary spiritual practice of Unitarian Universalism. We do not have the sort of religion in which we learn the creed and then spend the rest of our lives submitting to that creed. Instead, we commit to travel together in religious community. We commit to that really hard work of staying, continuing to stay in relationship in a loving and respectful manner with other people with whom we disagree or we find irritating, maybe infuriating, maybe heartbreaking, beautiful and messy and imperfect. We are, we all are, I am, we all are. And sometimes we don't live up to our own values. I'm from Texas, where I know a UU couple, Ron and Kay, dear people, good people, a heteronormative couple who, like us, wants to live out their values in their daily life. They were having some challenging times last year, and one morning, they've been arguing even before getting downstairs for breakfast. They're going on their way, they're getting ready for their day, and Kay put on a dress that had a particularly difficult zipper. Even though she was put out with Ron, she asked him for help. Well, he was still angry, and he did zip the dress up, but then he zipped it back down again, and he turned around and walked away. They did not kiss each other goodbye that morning. So that afternoon, after work, Kay drives home, and she can see Ron in the driveway working on the car. She parks in the street, and she pauses as she passes him. He's under the car. He's on one of those rolling dollies, and just his legs are sticking out. But she narrows her eyes, and she crouches down and she grabs the zipper on his pants and she zips it down and up and down and up and stands up and walks away. She can hear him yell. He hit his head on the metal underneath the car. She can still hear him yelling as she's walking in the door, through the living room, into the kitchen. And at the kitchen table is her husband, Ron. It was his brother working on the car out in the driveway. So these are good people, Ron and Kay. They had entered into a covenantal relationship to love each other, to honor each other, to respect each other, based on that deepest respect they had for each other. But on that day, each of them, at a different moment, each of them made a choice to step away from that covenant. So I want you to take a moment right now. Close your eyes if that works for you. But go inside and think of a way in which you have not lived up to your own expectations. You have disappointed yourself. So right now, forgive yourself. You did the best you could at that time. In your mind, say those words, "I forgive you." Now, right now, think of someone who has disappointed you. I'm not talking about brutality or trauma here, but disappointment. Someone who has disappointed you. Now imagine that person saying to you, "I did the best I could at the time. So right now, forgive them. They did the best they could at the time." In your mind, say the words to this person, "I forgive you." Thank you. You can open your eyes now. Self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others. These are part of the spiritual practice of right relationship. As we travel together bound in covenant and community in the spirit of love. Forgiveness of self and forgiveness of others. It is foundational. James Luther Adams, the Reverend James Luther Adams, one of our premier UU theologians in the 20th century, says, "We are a promise-making and a promise-breaking people, aren't we?" I am. It's painful when I make a promise that I can't or don't keep. One of my particular discernments in my whole life, one of my particular challenges in my whole life is discernment about where I put my time and energy and talents. And it can be too easy for me to overcommit myself, and then something has to give. Either I'm doing a half-baked job at everything, or something really falls through the cracks. It is humbling when our hearts get broken, and when our own imperfections are the cause of someone else's heartbreak. I believe it is our underlying spiritual practice, right relationship, conflict competency for Unitarian Universalists. Once we enter into that covenant, it is our work to do what we need to do to stay on our side of the street, to stay in right relationship, to clean up our side of the street. Now, you might know about me, you might not, but I've recently left the Boulder Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship as assistant minister I was there on an 18-month contract, and it was over in June. It's a terrible thing to have to leave a beautiful congregation, but we do it, we ministers do it. And now I'm working to create a new UU congregation in the Denver metro area. It's a different model. It's missional, focused on long-term healing and recovery from addictions. I know Reverend Sean preached recently about addictions. I hear tell he quoted me. And it is the community connection piece that is relevant here. In congregations, we are often the lucky ones. You know, the studies show that if you attend church regularly, you live longer, you're happier, and you're healthier. And I believe it is the connections, the relationships, that bring those benefits. The world of addiction science is undergoing tremendous change and expansion of our understanding right now. Gabor Mate, a Vancouver doctor, has championed the harm reduction movement in his book, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts. He shows that the worst of addicts can be helped by refusing to shame or punish, but instead by giving them what they want. The drugs they take to reduce their pain. And at the same time, you give them what they want and also provide full wraparound services. And what happens then is that drug use goes down. Addiction is mitigated and healed through care and love. What we have in this country instead is a brutal system that punishes and shames the people who need help the most. Now, some of you have probably read, it was a UU Common Read book a few years ago, Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. Anybody's read that? It's a good book to read, highly recommended. So she opened a lot of people's eyes to how the war on drugs was consciously racist from the start. How the 1980s created a system that targeted people of color, created the prison industrial complex, disenfranchised whole generations of brown-skinned communities, to the point that the American population now has the highest percentage of incarcerated people in the world, the developed world. And so much of it is in the name of a phony war on drugs. Johan Hari is a British journalist, and his book, Chasing the Scream, The First and Last Days of the War on Drugs, takes it back even further. He shows how in the 1920s, Mexican immigrants and African Americans were targeted out of racism and because that campaign propped up the new Federal Bureau of Narcotics. It was consciously racist, blatantly untruthful, and manipulative. The drug war in this country encompasses nearly 100 years of racism and brutality targeting marginalized people of color, communities of color. Now, this might be new to some of you. It really is the cutting edge of new addiction science and understanding. But we know addiction is enormously complicated and deeply painful. If it affects you directly, or if it affects your family or your loved ones. A good working definition of addiction is any behavior that gives you temporary relief, temporary pleasure, but in the long term it causes harm, has negative consequences, and yet you cannot give it up despite those negative consequences. I'm going to say that again. Any behavior that gives you temporary relief, temporary pleasure, but in the long term causes harm, has its negative consequences, and yet you cannot give it up despite those negative consequences. Now, if you are willing, let's see a show of hands of those of you who are affected by addiction to drugs and/or alcohol, either directly or within your family or close circle, if you're willing. Yeah, there's a lot of us here. I gave up drugs and alcohol decades ago, almost 40 years. I struggle with food today. I eat more of it than I need, and the older that I get, the more health consequences there are. I feel very close sometimes to active addiction in that way. So now let us expand that definition of addiction, which we oftentimes think of just as alcohol and drugs, but it includes all those other ways: sex, money, food, gambling, video games or the internet, workaholism. So if you're willing to raise your hands with that expanded version, if it affects you directly or in your family or loved ones, are you affected by addictions in the daily? Yes, it affects so many of us. Now I suspect, looking out here at you beautiful people, I suspect there are no active heroin addicts in the room right now. It's a possibility, but I suspect that that's true. Addicts and alcoholics invariably suffer terrible trauma if you're addicted to drugs or alcohol. But we know there are levels of dysfunction and levels of trauma that we suffer when we're young and have no agency over our own lives. But as I said, we are the lucky ones here in congregational life. This life pattern of ours, of getting involved and staying involved, it creates connection and it deepens interdependence. And if we stay, if we live up to our covenant to walk together in religious community, if we stay and work through the normal challenges of messy human community, we can heal. That connection is a way to heal. Congregational life can be and should be countercultural, resisting the materialist consumer culture out there that is based on fear, that is based on escapism, resisting the culture of isolation and divisiveness. This culture of ours is broken and fractured. It doesn't create addiction. It turns out that drugs and alcohol as substances are not really addictive. It's not the substances, it's the person. The addiction is within the person that needs to medicate that deep pain that they are carrying. But what our culture does is make things worse through shaming and shunning and minimum sentencing requirements and punishment and profit motive, rather than care and rehabilitation. Johann Hari says that the opposite of addiction isn't necessarily sobriety or abstinence. The opposite of addiction is connection. And connection is what we're doing here in congregational life. A connection that heals, a connection that is real, that goes beyond the surface. Adrienne Marie Brown is a brilliant young activist, social justice worker, and author of the book Emergent Strategy, where she offers a poem, A Complex Movement. Over and over again, it becomes known. The peace we seek is seeking us. The joy, a full bud awaiting our attention. Justice in our hands, longing to be practiced. The whole world learning from within. This thrilling moat in the universe, laboratory, labyrinth. Internalized demands. You are the one you are waiting for. Externalized love bind us together into a greater self, a complex movement, a generative abundance, embodied evolution. Learn to be here. Critique is a seductress. Her door is always open. So what if we get some? We are going further, past reform to wonder. This requires comprehension that cannot fit into words. It's out beyond our children, beyond the end of time. There is a ceaseless cycle, a fractal of sublime. And we come to create it, to soil our hands and faces, loving, loving, and loving ourselves and all our places. My friends, we are learning together. We are all learning together. We are loving together, ourselves and each other. Courageous love, connection, and interdependence in a covenantal community. We are learning to embrace multiple truths and opening our hearts to the complexity of our worlds in its multiple hues. We all make so many mistakes, so let us make them together. Let us dwell together in peace. Let us seek the truth in love. Let us help one another in community, in covenant.